This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
It's almost Thanksgiving.
It is.
A time to give thanks for all that we've been given.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately afterwards, go spend a lot of money.
Yes.
Black Friday.
Buy Smart History Babes merchandise online.
There you go.
From the comfort of your own home.
In the spirit of the holiday, we are putting everything black in our store on sale. So our black crop tops and black t-shirts will be 20% off.
Boom, boom.
And our black tote bags will be 15% off.
Dang. You know it.
That's a deal.
It's a deal and a steal.
Head over to arthistorybabes.com/merchandise. We will be running the sale from November 20th to November 27th, Cyber Monday. You don't have to leave your Thanksgiving meal early to go stand in line. You can.
Please don't.
Yeah, crazy. Don't do
don't
it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
I can't believe
save
people
yourself.
Still do that.
Yeah. No, go do something fun on Black Friday. Take the day off and go to a art museum.
Go get a pedicure.
Yeah.
Go to a movie. Just make some pasta.
Enjoy. Ooh. Enjoy your people. Yeah, and some pasta.
Yeah. It's a wise, healthy choice. Black Friday, from us to you. Check it out.
We love you.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the art history bay.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Nat, and we are the Art History Babes. We're half of the Art History Babes.
Two babes today.
Ooh.
Jinx.
You only have hope. I feel like we said it at the same time. I don't know why I laughed like I won.
Jinx, double jinx. How do you, like, undo jinx? Isn't there, like, some kind of saying? Like, jinx, double jinx, something, something, something? I don't know.
I don't know.
Did I make that up?
I don't think you did, but I have no idea what it is.
Well, now, we owe each other cokes.
Do you remember being a child and, like, taking it so seriously? And if someone wouldn't be silent, you were like, fuck you. Like,
how dare you?
You do not respect the laws of jinx. This will be our last play date.
You son of a bitch.
Can you tell I was a rule follower as a child? I'm still kind of a rule
follower. Yeah, you are. Earth sign. We were just talking about astrology.
Yeah.
You guys, you like order.
Mm-hmm.
Understandably so.
I do.
It's
which is,
nice.
I try and, like, combat it all the time because, like, when I think really hard about things, like, I don't believe that everything needs to be in order. That makes me feel like a little neo-Nazi when I start, like, thinking that way. But, like, yeah, disorder and, like, things like that can make me so unbelievably uncomfortable, or, like, I don't respect authority to a fault, but, like, it's so hard for me to be, like, disrespectful.
Yeah,
like,
that's very Capricorn.
It's so weird.
See, I'm definitely settling into my Capricorn moon, and, like, I don't, I'm finding a lot of solace in order.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily authority. I've always been, I have always had a problem with authority, let's be real. Like, just, not in, like, a real way, in the sense that, like, I was never, like, a lawbreaker. Like, that's never been my vibe, but in the sense of, like, question everything, question everyone. Anyone who tries to tell me anything with any bit of authority, I'm, like, always looking for, like, the...
See, I've gotten more like that.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. So, for those of you that don't know, Corey is a Sun Scorpio and Capricorn Moon, and I am a Capricorn Sun and Scorpio Moon. So we are growing more like one another every day, pretty much.
It's a beautiful balance.
At 30, we will just full on switch.
Yeah, very true. Like, I don't know, especially because I'm going through my Saturn's return right now, so I'm finding a lot of comfort in my Moon sign and, like, being organized and working hard and just being, like, a little more earthy and not diving so far into those watery depths is nice. I think it's balancing me back out a little bit. Also, not to scare you, because the watery depths are fun places.
Yeah, yeah. I've been on the earth my whole life. So I'm ready for some new elements to go on.
Yeah, it's fun. Water signs are fun. I like being a water sign.
Yeah, there's too many rules in being an earth sign. I mean, you like implement these rules on yourself to just always be like, we're gonna keep using the cliches, like grounded, like to just feel like you're being responsible and grounded and always doing the right thing.
That's so exhausting. It's so true. Earth signs love the rules, but but likewise, being a water sign, it's really exhausting living in existence without rules sometimes because there's just no end to that, and it gets like really overwhelming, and it gets really like, you're really quick to fall into this place of like, what does anything mean? You know, so having organization and rules can bring you back to earth.
Huh. I think the transitory stages are so hard for me, and I always look at them like from afar, like, oh yes, when I'm done with grad school, I'm going to get so much done, and all my free time, I'm going to organize everything, and I'm going to purge all my stuff, and like, that is happening so slowly, and I think it's because I have no order right now. Like, like today's actually been nice because I had like things to do and places to be, but when that's not just naturally part of my schedule, I just feel like overwhelmed. And I just want to curl up in bed and not do anything.
Dude, I totally feel you. Actually, that's why I've kind of enjoyed post-grad school more, because grad school is a lot of work, but I also feel like it's a lot of liminal times, like liminal spaces, and like you have to decide when you work on things, and there's big chunks of time where you technically don't have to do anything, and for me, I would get lost in those chunks of time a lot.
Yeah, I kind of could too sometimes.
Yeah, and this, now that I'm done with grad school and then I just, you know, started this job, like, I'm teaching English remotely and my hours are crazy, and so now I have to put myself on this really intense schedule, and then it's just causing me, like, I'm way cleaner and more organized. Not that I was ever, like, dirty or disorganized. I've always been kind of organized. But I'm, like, really on top of my cleaning and my organization.
I was going to say, I've been to your place twice now in the last 2 weeks, and it looks pretty spotless. Here.
Thanks.
Unlike mine, as you saw, which is just, like, boxes and anarchy.
Just complete anarchy. But, yeah, I've just been, like, my schedule, it's been so much more organized, and as a result, I'm getting a lot more done. Like, I've been putting a lot of time into the podcast, and, like, I just, like, am putting aside time frames to work on specific projects in a way that I didn't really do in grad school. In grad school, it was kind of like, I'm going to go to class, and then I'm going to get lunch, and then I'll, like, go to my other class, and then maybe I'll grade, and then I'm just going to watch TV, and then, you know, it was a little more like, it was kind of chaotic, whereas my schedule now, also, I'm just, like, not going out as much and stuff, so I'm just being an adult.
So, like, secluded spot in the burbs.
Exactly. I moved out to the burbs, and it's basically my equivalent of a cabin in the woods.
Yeah.
And I've been productive as fuck since I've been out here. So that's where we're at in our in our lives and our astrological patterns right now. But we're going to talk about another badass Scorpio babe.
We are.
Miss
awesome.
Sonia Delaunay.
Mm-hmm.
And man, she is just something else. And once again, like so many badass women artists, like she's even one of the more well-known ones, and she's not that well-known.
Yeah,
you know,
real. She's totally undervalued, and like, thank heavens for discounted book racks. Never walk by them. Just check them out, especially arts-related ones, because I found a book about this retrospective they did for her. So it's from an exhibit, and that's how I kind of got introduced to her, and it was so random and by chance, but I'm so glad I picked it up because she is a badass. So just to start off, she was born November 14th, 1885, and actually born as Sarah Elivante. I'm going to mess this up. Elivna Stern. Elivna? Sarah Elivna Stern. So she was born to a Jewish family in Odessa, Ukraine. Only lived there for the beginning of her life before she moved in with her uncle in St. Petersburg. So she moves to Russia in 1892 at age 7 and begins going by Sophia Turk, T-E-R-K, but everyone called her Sonia. So she goes by lots of names.
Why not?
I know, right? So she's pretty much been going by Sonia since age 7. You know, she grew up in Russia with her uncle, and that's where she started to be a little more exposed to museums and art and culture. And as you can guess, she's starting to learn multiple languages. At age 19, she moves to Heidelberg, Germany, and starts studying painting at the Academy of Fine Arts in Karlsruhe? My German's a little rusty. With Professor Ludwig Schmidt-Rut. And yeah, so she's studying art in Germany. So now we're up to 3 languages, guys. She's a badass. I'm going to say that like 100 times in this episode. 1906, she moves to Paris. And I think she learned French before she moved to Paris, but now she's speaking 4 languages. And
dang.
Yeah, I know, right? Pretty quickly moving to Paris, she begins moving around in these avant-garde circles. I'm sure you guys have heard all about these. Not anyone who knows anything about art, that sounds so patronizing, but like... but you know, that's like kind of the cliche.
Yeah.
Like when you think about art, you think of like the Impressionists and you think of Paris and these people sitting in apartments, you know, covered in art and
just art everywhere. Or little Parisian coffee shops.
Exactly.
And just discussing art and literature.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So she gets into these circles from this art critic and collector named Wilhelm Ude. U-H-D-E. Also, Robert Delaunay, who would be her future husband. Interesting, actually, she married both of these men. William Ude was gay. She married him pretty quickly after arriving in Paris because her family wanted to bring her back to St. Petersburg. And so she got married to kind of be like, I have a life here, and I'm not just, like, shitting around. Like,
look at me being responsible.
So it was a purely business, not business, what would that be?
Just a, marriage of convenience?
Yeah, like necessity.
Yeah, it's like there's no romance,
It was a platonic marriage because she wanted to stay in Paris. I think we'll have to do a full episode on this guy. He seems amazingly interesting. And he's one of the first people to exhibit Cubist work and collect it. And he lost 2 separate art collections to both world wars. So,
that's so crazy.
Yeah. But
I just, like, I'm proud of him for not giving up.
Right.
For just, like, having, like, that's what you gotta do. Like, the World War takes, like, your whole life, and then you're like, fuck it, let's do it again.
Yeah, like that's someone who's collecting for the love of art, not for profit.
Yeah.
He wanted to be around the arts. So she's moving around in these circles with Ude and Robert Delaunay, who, again, she would marry in 1910. Her marriage with Ude was in 1908. And they very quickly, it's so confusing when they have the same last name, Sonia Delaunay and Robert Delaunay very quickly become one of these really...
Got some champagne on the mic.
I just fed the mic some champagne.
I was trying to make, like, the cool, like, bubbly noise into the mic.
It.
Maybe you caught it. Yeah. I don't know, but there's now champagne all over the mic. But
it's
whatever.
Okay. I probably needed it.
Cheers.
Yeah, so... Their living room pretty quickly becomes an international hub for the avant-garde and literature, arts, what have you. And their artistic search centered on an art of pure color, modulated by light, rhythm, and movement, which was called Can you help me?
I've been pronouncing
There's
it.
There's an extra syllable in there that I don't
Simultanism,
like. Simultanism. Yeah.
Because, like, I think the...
It comes from
the
simultaneous.
The impetus, is to say simultanism, but I don't think
simultanism.
That...
See, I just wanted to say simultism. I don't like that and.
Yeah.
Simultanism. So, coming from simultaneous. So, the idea is colors kind of existing simultaneously. And this movement was compared to Bauhaus theory.
Which we will also do a whole
episode. Which is kind of crazy. We haven't done that yet.
I know. That'll...
We
should throw that.
We don't like
to
be predictable. So Bauhaus, like in the way that they wanted to bring fine art into everyday life. They didn't want there to be such a clear distinction between what is fine art and what is decorative or craft or design, any of these things. They wanted to merge them.
That's what's up.
Yeah, like, right? So, you know, the Delaunay's eyes, craft and art were the same thing. There's no hierarchy. They're the same.
That's what up.
Exactly.
Throwback to thesis series, craft and morality.
Yes. There's all of these things are interwoven, guys. They're all connected.
Not to jump in on you, are you going to talk about Orphism at all?
Oh, no, go ahead. Okay. I was just going to mention that it also goes by the name Orphism.
So, simultanism is, as Nat was saying, is essentially this idea that was created, spearheaded by the Delaunays, both Sonia and Robert. And the idea was matching primary and secondary colors that often would create, like, visual vibration. Basically, it was all about simultaneous color. It was all about putting colors side by side and the effects of them. Robert Delaunay used the term simultanism. that was his word that came from simultaneous contrast. However, the same idea has also been defined as orphism, which is a term that was coined by poet and art critic Guillaume Apollinaire. To him, the work that they were doing, it was a subsect of cubism. Mm-hmm. It was a form of cubism, but to him, he saw music happening with the different colors and, like, the Fauvist influence. Yep. So he considered this work that was dealing with simultaneous contrast to be very musical. And so Orphism is a reference to the poet and singer of Greek myth, Orpheus. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Orphism. Orphism you'll probably hear more often, honestly, because it was used in actual art criticism. But as we all know, artists don't like the names that art critics give their work. So
they came up with their own.
Yeah, so the Delaunays went with simultanism.
Yes.
There we go.
Exactly. That's a perfect segue. I'll just talk a little bit more about simultanism. I said that one really weird. Simultanism.
Simultanism.
Oh, gosh. We got to look up one of those pronunciation YouTube things after this. Right? Simultanism.
Yeah, I agree. It should just be like simultism or something. I feel like it's just, there's too much.
It was coined by the Delaunays, but it was derived originally from theories in Michel-Eugène Chevreul, that's my best French, book on the law of simultaneous contrast of colors, written in 1839, where Chevreul identifies the phenomenon of colors looking different depending on the colors around them. So their paintings, the Delaunays, consist of interlocking or overlapping patches or planes of contrasting or complementary colors. So again, in Chevreul's theory and in reality, contrasting colors brought together enhance one another, giving the painting greater intensity and vibrance of color. So that's what they're aiming to do with these paintings, is kind of create an intensity and a vibrance using pure color and moving away from form.
So very similar to Fauvism.
Exactly, yeah. Sonia Delaunay, in particular, back when she was Sonia Turk, became aware of and infatuated with Fauvism when she moved to St. Petersburg when she was a little bit younger. So, and then I think that was, or maybe it wasn't St. Petersburg, maybe it was Germany. That would make a little more sense. She was older.
Yeah, because she did, there was a lot of influence from Ukraine and Russia in her work.
Yeah, which is something that makes her so unique and why she should be talked about more, is that she has this Russian influence, but then came to her exact style and what she's known for in Paris. So she had, like, this beautiful mix of what it meant to be, like, a Parisian woman and a Russian woman. Like, she never let go of that Russian influence. And that set her apart in Paris, because she was able to kind of embody both of these strong women personalities in such a cool way.
Definitely. And it was also just a melding of the avant-garde with the folk.
Yeah.
Which is so, so important to her work. And so I think central to what she was about is that she was taking influences from intense theories of abstraction that people like Picasso and stuff are working off of. But then she's also taking influence from Ukrainian folk costume.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know, she just had a very strong understanding of the fact that, like, art doesn't have to be defined by how smart you are.
No.
Or, like, it comes from all places. And
yeah.
Yeah, she's just, she's amazing.
Totally, yeah. And, I mean, I've been harping on this language thing, but, so she ended up speaking French, German, English, Russian, and Spanish. So, and anyone who's bi, tri, whatever lingual you are.
Polyglots.
These polyglots, like, your brain is able to think in ways that people who are monolingual cannot. So
there's been a lot of research on that, actually. People that speak more than one language are found to be more creative than people that just speak one. It's just a fact. Use your brain.
I mean, you're literally able to express things that other people cannot express.
Exactly. Like, it's cool.
That's amazing. So she's engaged in the French and Russian avant-garde. She overlaid Russian themes and techniques on French stylistic motifs. Guys.
Champagne getting to you? No.
I don't think it's the champagne.
You've had a busy day.
I know.
How many miles have you already driven today? Like, a ton.
God. A ton. And I've been up since 4.
Oh, I've been up since 3:30, so I got you there. But I haven't really gone anywhere, so.
Yeah, but still. You still win. This was something I thought was really cool. So, in tradition with the Russian aesthetic movement, which was an avant-garde movement going on in Russia, creative couples were meant to dedicate their lives to a joint artistic goal, which I think perfectly defines the Delaunays if you read about them.
Yeah. They were an artistic power couple, for sure.
Yeah, like, he gets a lot of the credit, but, like, from what I've read, I think that he really respected her
definitely.
Like, depended on her a lot and considered her his complete partner. Like,
I don't
this
know.
This was not, like, a slighted wife situation.
Yeah.
History did that to her, not
exactly.
Her.
I mean, I don't know very much about Robert Delaunay, but I don't know that I would blame him for that. I think that was just a fuck the patriarchy moment, you know, where, unfortunately, like, yeah, you're probably more familiar with the name Robert Delaunay than Sonia Delaunay. I was. Mm-hmm. Like, he gets the credit. He gets a lot of the praise when her work was just as, if not more so, interesting than his. Like, she crossed over into places that he didn't cross over into. And really, the reality of it is not necessarily that, I'm not saying she was better than him or he was better than her. Like, they were a power couple, you know, but just at a time in history where the power couple wasn't really a thing, you know?
And the problem of, even though to them craft and art were interchangeable and there wasn't a superiority of painting or fine art, that doesn't mean that the rest of the world is going to look on it that way. So while she was doing more crafty endeavors, like, she moved from painting into needlework and then got into textiles, and I mean, she did so many different mediums.
She did.
She learned, I think when she was back in Paris, she learned printing. She learned how to do...
Yeah, she did illustration.
Yeah.
She did mosaics.
Mm-hmm.
She just did everything.
She did
I have
it.
This really good quote that I think just kind of fits into what we're talking about, and it's just amazing, so I'm going to bring it up right now.
Mm-hmm.
I always changed everything around me. I made my first white walls so our paintings would look better. I designed my furniture. I have done everything. I have lived my art.
Boom. Yeah.
Like, her life was art.
It was.
And it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, around 1912, 1913, she begins dipping into other art forms other than painting and a little bit more traditional, so printing and illustration. She does this collaboration, which is beautiful here. Let me pull it out for you. With Blaise Cendrars, who is a poet.
That's a dope name.
Yeah. And so, here it is. Boom. You can kind of flip through. It's in a few pages around here.
Ooh.
Yeah, while I talk about
I love all of this.
So,
is that watercolor?
Actually, here. Can you read the title? Because you'll say it way prettier than me.
Oh, will I? Oh, shit. I don't even know what the word is. La prose de Transberian et de la Petite Jeanne de France.
Say that. What do you mean, will I? So much better.
I don't know. That was, like, a good moment.
That was good.
My French accent isn't always there, but it was kind of there. Maybe it's the champagne.
It was you. was
I feel like I'm so much better at other languages. Like, my Spanish is so much better when I'm drunk. Hey. Like, I just, like, mm-hmm. I just let it come out.
My Italian used to be a lot better when I was drunk.
Yeah, well, I just don't question it. I just, like, let the words come out.
And that's so, I mean, it's the doubt that really catches you up, and that's why you freeze up.
Exactly.
But anyway, so this poem, this it was a 445-line poem, and the collaboration was that she painted over the printed poem, and it's a 2 meter long sheet of paper, so it's like a banner. She colored over it with stencil. They did this in 1913, and it is just so cool to look
at. It is cool.
And I feel like you've seen things like this since, but like, imagine in 1913.
Yeah, like, exactly. It's like, so you know how, like, I mean, I guess it's a little different than that because it's, like, in the margins and stuff. But, like, you know how, like, blackout poetry mm-hmm. got really big? Mm-hmm. It's like that, but, like, way more colorful and fun. Like, there's watercolors, like, just filling things in.
It's equal parts fun and, like, thought out. Mm-hmm. And it's got a really nice composition to it, but it doesn't look too structured. I don't know. It's whimsical. It's beautiful.
It's very whimsical. And I love a good dose of whimsy.
Yeah. Oh, it's, man. It's awesome. And then, I love this one. She made simultaneous. They start calling things that they make simultaneous in the name of simultanism. So simultaneous waistcoats and dresses for herself and her husband to wear to dance halls.
Love it.
There's pictures of her in that back close to where the
And that became was. I wrote that down actually. That became an actual like term in fashion, simultaneous dresses.
Yeah. And she started her own label called Atelier Simultane. And she decorated their entire apartment around this time with simultaneous objects. So cushions, lampshades, boxes, and a wooden toy box for their son.
I love her so much.
She really just did everything. And, like, that's why...
Where do I get this swimsuit? I know. I want that so bad.
She's wonderful.
And this umbrella?
Like, a lot of the stuff that she made around this time, men, like, would never do. So mm-hmm. that's, like, this merging of art and craft is so important. And,
definitely.
Like, Robert Delaunay would have never gotten into needlework and textiles and all this stuff. It just, like, wasn't... I mean, it would have been cool if he had, but...
But at this... Especially at this time in history, needlework was defined as women's work. Especially, like, even though historically that wasn't always the case, at this time it was.
Yeah, definitely. And so it was almost like where being a woman could have put restrictions on her, it, like, opened the door to so much more in her case, which, thank goodness for that.
There's a lot of possibility when you're not being held back by patriarchal expectations. Mm-hmm. When you're just like, hey, I'm just a human and I'm gonna do what I want, and I don't care if you're gonna define it as manly or womanly or whatever.
It probably didn't hurt that she was already like a educated painter. Like mm-hmm. she was trained in painting, so she already had that down. She was like, oh, the masculine stuff, I got that.
Exactly.
Let me move on to some more challenging shit.
Oh, cubism. Okay. And while all the like male avant-garde cubist artists are like fighting over, you know, which African faces they're gonna appropriate, she was like making actual shit, you know,
from cultures that she actually understood because she lived them. Revolutionary.
Oh my god.
So I love this because this woman speaks so many languages, but she found color to be an authentic substitute for the expressive deficiencies of language.
Hell yeah.
So she speaks 5 languages and she's like, nope, just, color.
Yeah. I love that so much.
Yeah, so in the poem that we looked at earlier, La Prose du Chassier Bien. I fucked that up, Corey. Rewind and listen to how Corey said it. That was the first attempt to transcribe this spoken word of color. And I think she did an amazing job.
Yeah.
I wish I could read that poem.
It mentions Chagall, I noticed, which I was very excited about.
Oh.
I love Chagall so much.
Yeah, that could be a fun project for you to sit down and go through and...
Be good for me. I need to practice my French really bad. That's on that, like, Chagall is also, like... Jewish fauve painter. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some Well, Sonia Delaunay's work is definitely different. She worked more in just shapes, and Chagall had kind of a surrealist bend to his work, and he had actual, like, figures in a lot of his work. So there's definitely differences, but I think they overlapped in some things.
Yeah, Sundar's wrote the poem, so it would make sense that if he was attracted to Chagall and that's something that he was interested in, that he would want to work with Delaunay. And,
exactly.
Like, yeah.
Sephora stores are everywhere you are, so just pop in when you need a brown lip to match your 90s playlist, a confidence boost before your interview, or a last-minute gift for mom's birthday. There's always a Sephora near you. Just pop in. Use our store locator to find your local Sephora or Sephora at Kohl's.
Looking for any dope gifts for the holiday season?
It's coming up.
It is.
It's coming right around the corner.
Oh, man. That's true. For those of you who forgot, it's that time of year.
We're getting to that point, and we have a new fun thing we're doing.
Featured artist.
What?
It's so exciting.
It's actually very exciting.
Our featured artist for the holiday season.
Faith Sponsler.
We are obsessed with
Love her.
She's amazing.
She's a friend, a muse.
An alchemist.
Alchemist?
Artist. I would call her something of a wizard.
A mage.
Yeah.
A wizard or a mage.
She has done a collaboration with us, which she created beautiful, color-changing art history babes prints. Limited edition. There's not a ton of them, so you're going to want to get one.
Get them while you can.
I want that.
They're great. They're really
beautiful.
Fun.
Yeah.
She did an amazing job. I love her color changing prints. They're the coolest. Like, you just put them in some tea or some coffee and watch it change before your eyes.
It's beautiful.
Magique.
The whole process is super fun. And you get to be involved in the art, which is always a cool thing.
You will be a patron of the arts.
Yeah.
Wealthy Italian men in Vatican City in the Renaissance, you'll be like them.
Exactly. That's what buying one of these prints will make you.
Basically.
You're basically a
cardinal.
Head over to arthistorybabes.com. Click on our featured artist tag. You can read all about Faith and her work.
Yes.
And you can buy as many prints as long as supplies last.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Limited supply.
Act fast.
In 1914... Robert and Sonia went on vacation to the Basque countryside, and war began. So they decided to stay in Spain, and they moved to Madrid. Robert had been dismissed or, like, excused from fighting in war due to some sort of, I don't know exactly what it was. He had some,
did he have some
disability, yeah, that excused him from war. So he was good. He was off the hook, but they moved.
Because
to Spain.
I'm an artist.
Can't enter my hands. They move into a villa that they call La Villa Simultanea.
That's cute.
Yeah, how cute is that? And
I wonder if they use that as, like, a metaphor for their relationship, like simultaneous contrast.
Aww.
That's cute.
That is really cute. I hope they did.
And me too. That's also a really good band name.
Yeah. But it would also be
And
a
we
great...
are simultaneous contrast.
That's a great band name. Someone start a band and give us credit.
Please do.
And then send us concert.
Also, like, that's, yeah, because there, a lot of people read their work as being very musical, so you could do a lot of things with that.
Totally. I mean, I was just about to say, that'd be a great essay, like, about the two of them, just, like, an essay about their relationship and simultaneous color, or a book, full book. These people deserve a book.
We already talked about writing a Hilmuth Clint book, but we'll do a Delaunay, the Delaunays by the Art History Babes.
It'll be called, wait, what was it? Simultaneous Contrast.
Yes.
The Power Couple. That's it. I was going to keep going, but that's it. So in 1916, they moved to Portugal. They're all over the place, but they moved back to Barcelona in 1917. And then back to Madrid. So they were very transient people.
Mm-hmm. Like all good artists.
Yeah. And I didn't write this down. Back a few years before that, they had a child. So they have a son that they're also kind of hopping around with. So this kid is destined to be fucking awesome human being.
And their son, yeah, he was. He became a master of jazz music. Jazz
music. Of course
he did. He knows a lot about jazz music. I don't know if he's still alive or not. Is that possible? What year did she?
Yeah, she didn't die that long. I mean, not that long ago. It's possible. 1979. I mean,
yeah, so maybe he's still alive. I'm not really sure.
Well, let me think.
It's possible.
He'd be old.
Old, yeah.
Because they had him in 19... I think it was around 1913 or 1914.
Okay, it's possible, but...
but he's not listening to the podcast.
Yeah, we hope you're doing well if you're out there. But his existence was also very important in Sonia's development of her art and how it developed past painting.
Yeah,
can tell. Because... So, as we said, she was trained as a painter. She painted before she really moved into any of these other art forms, any of these, like, folk art forms. And in 1911, wait, he was born in 1913?
No, it might have been 1911. Okay. I estimated with, like, trying to remember where in my notes. I was like, oh, they have a son. Because I didn't write it down.
In 1911, I'm guessing this is the year her son was born. In 1911, she made a quilt for her son that was influenced by those she had seen in the houses of Russian peasants. And as she was making it, she felt that it evoked a lot of cubist conceptions and cubist ideas in the way that the colors worked with each other, contrasted each other. And that really pushed her in this direction of working in the applied arts, working in furniture, working in quilts, working in fashion. And also this, I think, is a interesting throwback to our color theory episode when I talked about that quilt exhibit that I went to. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, that's the cradle quilt. That's it.
Oh, my God.
It's really cool.
We'll post a picture of this.
Yeah.
Most definitely. This is a really cool quilt.
I love the colors.
Yeah, me too.
And they probably were brighter back when she made it, but I kind of like what they've faded to.
Yeah, and the shapes, she definitely played with shapes in this quilt a lot.
Yeah. You want a cradle quilt from Sonia Delaney?
I wonder how much that one goes for right now. Yeah, so she made this quilt for her son, which kind of pushed her into the applied arts. And yeah, like I said, I think that relates to what we talked about in the color theory episode with historically how just the art of quilt making has interacted with color theory in really important ways. And it's just been totally overlooked because they're quilts and how can quilts be art, right?
Yeah.
You know? But like this quilt that we were just talking about, she's dealing with these abstract shapes. She's playing with a very intentional color palette. It's a really beautiful quilt, and it's clearly cubist in nature, and it just so happens that she's doing it, you know, by sewing and not on a canvas, which is more interesting, in my opinion, than a bunch of guys doing the same cubist painting over and over again, you know?
She started there, but then she expanded.
Yeah, exactly. Cheers to Charles Delaunay.
Charles Delaunay.
For helping influence Sonia to kind of move in that direction. Because, as like, her paintings are great. And I think
they are.
We're going to talk a little more in depth about them. But at the same time, I am just as, if not more so, compelled by her work in other arenas. Because I think it shows a lot of creativity.
Yeah, and we kind of skipped over this, or I kind of skipped over this. She also designed some book bindings and covers.
Oh my God, she's so cool.
I know.
How?
She really, you hear about people who let their art kind of transcend into everything they do in life, but like, there aren't many artists that you can see that like really do that.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm thinking like William Morris, like everything is art, and Sonia Delaunay.
Yeah.
Like, I can't really think of anyone else off the top of my head that was so dedicated to just like touching everything.
Yeah. And that, once again, going back to some of the ideas in, like, our craft and morality episode, that's why all you crafters out there are very important. Because you're trying to make beautiful stuff out of everyday objects and just, like, make your life a beautiful work of art. And, unfortunately, that's not quite as appreciated as it should be.
I'm hoping that maybe it will start to be in our generation. I think that...
Well, I mean, obviously, like, crafting's a huge thing right now.
Yeah, you know? And I hope that art historians... I mean, we will. So, F everyone else who won't.
And I mean, but, there are some amazing art historians that focus solely on craft theory.
Yeah.
It is a thing.
I'm excited for it to possibly just, like, be talked about, like, not its
just,
own.
Me too! Because there's still, I talked about this on my thesis episode, but there is still this impetus to, even by the best craft historians, they still want to define craft as separate from art. Like, there's just this desire to keep it separate.
Yeah. And maybe it's so that they can be on top of their field.
Yeah, maybe. Like, but there's just this desire, because even though they're arguing, there were multiple books I read where they're arguing that craft deserves this attention and it deserves all these things, but they're still arguing that there's a distinction. And I'm like, why though? Like, why is there a distinction between a painting and a beautiful hand-sewn gown? Like, why is there, like, it's art. Like, let's just stop with the semantics. It's art, yeah. You know?
Well, and we're getting to a point that it's, I mean, we've talked about this a little bit lately with, like, modern works, and we talked about Cy Twombly's paint, the pure white painting, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, we're really deep and conceptual and stuff, but, like, the stuff that's often considered craft is, like, stuff that could be lasting and used.
Yeah.
Like, and artists now are making things that are meant to be, like, temporary and that are meant to be disintegrate or fall apart eventually. It's like you're twisting what the arts and crafts movement just did.
Yeah.
Like, but was actually useful.
Yeah.
Like,
that's one of the number one distinctions between quote-unquote craft and modern art, and that a lot of these scholars make, is that, oh, well, modern art's conceptual and craft is utilitarian. And who says that something utilitarian can't also be conceptual?
Yeah.
Like, just because I can use a mug to, like, drink something, that doesn't mean there can't be a concept attached to it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they can be both.
Yeah.
It's possible.
I don't know. Sometimes it just seems like we have to go so far around the main point of something to appreciate it.
I know,
it's like,
right?
You have to go all the way around to come back to it and be like, oh, okay. I guess that is art.
So true.
So I guess the last little bits that I wanted to throw out were that in 1917, the Bolsheviks seized the property owned by Sonia Delaunay's family. So all of her, like, inheritance and family money is gone.
Like, yeah, so, like, up until this point, I don't know if you really stressed this, but up until this point, they were kind of, like, living off of family money, but also I think they were, like, renting property and stuff, too. But, like, they had that beautiful opportunity to just be artists.
Yeah.
They didn't have to have jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. They had that freedom, and now that is gone. And this is the same year that she begins to form a friendship with Tristan Tzara. So connected to the Dada movement, wrote the Dada Manifesto. He's a big deal. Last cool tidbit, in 1918, she designed all the costumes for the Ballet Rue Cléopâtre in London. And her husband designed all the sets.
So, like,
power couple.
Simultaneous contrast.
Right?
So, kind of going off of that, I have just a few more things to add. Yeah, so 1917, all of her properties are seized, and they have to, you know, kind of figure out a way to make a consistent income. And so that also kind of helped launch them into this applied arts thing. So Sonia starts making a living off of costume design and things. And so she designs the costumes for this ballet. Robert does the sets. In 1918, she opens Casa Sonia, which was an interior and fashion boutique. Awesome. Mm-hmm. 1923, she did the set and costume design for Tristan Tzara's play, La Cour à Gaz. 1926, she did an illustration for a Vogue cover, mm-hmm. which is a super cool illustration.
I have a picture of one of their costumes.
Oh, I love it.
Isn't that amazing?
That's so fun.
Yeah, they're like, they're so boxy, but like in the best way. They make the actors look like cartoons.
I would have loved to see some of that early 20th century theater.
Yeah.
Like, it was weird. Like, it was really weird.
Yeah.
Like, people, I think, underestimate the weird stuff they were doing at that time theatrically.
And just to throw in, too, before you move on, she also designed a book binding, because she did that, for Tristan Tzara's De Nos Usages.
But yeah, and then she continued, she did costumes and furniture for several films. And it was something that did kind of continue throughout her life, but so did painting. She was involved in both the first and second wave of abstraction. So she was still making work, you know, during that whole second wave of abstract expressionists and mm-hmm. things like that. Let's see, we talked about the simultaneous dresses. So she gave some pretty important things to the fashion world. Like, yeah, things that are still being played with today and still influenced today.
I mean, her patterns alone, you guys, are just awesome.
They're so cool.
They're, like, if you like Anthropology, the store, mm-hmm, like,
I wonder if they've ever, like, made something influenced by her work.
Oh, they have to. Yeah. Like, if you flip through this, they have to. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm pretty strictly a window shopper at Anthropologie.
Yeah, it's
like,
pretty spendy. Yeah. Every once in a while, there's something slightly affordable.
But I was going to say, I've gotten gift cards back when I was a youth, and my mom bought me clothes. I had a few things from there. Since becoming an adult, I don't really shop there anymore. It's pretty heartbreaking.
I feel you.
But beautiful stuff. I mean, I honestly actually enjoy just going in and looking around because mm-hmm, it's just pretty.
Yeah. And the stores are really well, they're really well curated.
They're really well, that would be, imagine being a store designer mm-hmm for an Anthropologie and just getting to go around and,
oh, that'd be fun,
kind of like, yeah, set displays for Anthropologie yeah stores.
They are fun stores to go
yeah
in.
Yeah, just be like, you can be an angry person.
That reminds me of that episode of The Office where it's when Will Ferrell is the, he takes,
he's the intern boss.
Yeah, he's the intern boss. Hold on, I know his name. D'Angelo Vickers.
Yeah.
D'Angelo Vickers, and he hires that random ass girl to work there, and everyone's like, what? And her only job before that was working at Anthropologie.
I don't remember that, but I wish I did.
And Kelly was like, you worked at Anthropologie? It's like, how do I get that job? I love The Office.
An amazing side.
Yeah. Who doesn't love The Office, though? Let's be real. I want to name my future dog D'Angelo Vickers.
That's a great. Honestly, it'd be even better, though, if you got two dogs and one was D'Angelo and one was Vickers.
D'Angelo and Vickers.
And just, that could be, like, your test for people.
Yeah. Like, if they catch that reference, yeah, then
top of the list.
You're my people.
Yeah.
Few more things on our girl, Sonia. This is big. 1964, she was the first living female artist to ever have a retrospective at the Louvre. I'm going to give that a second to sink in. 1964. The Louvre has been a museum since 1793. And the first living female artist ever have a retrospective was Sonia Delaunay in 1964.
And how many of you probably still didn't know her name?
Yeah!
Such an interesting world.
Mm-hmm. So there's that kind of just like ultimate badassery right there. Other things, the French Legion of Honor named her an mm-hmm officer in 1975, which is one of the highest decorations that mm-hmm they award. In 1937, her and Robert worked on the World Exhibition Pavilion in Paris, which is, like, right by the, the big Eiffel Tower.
That thing?
You know, the big thing there.
That obstructs your view of a lot of other things.
the big structure
just
they
kidding
got.
I went to the top of that thing. It's cool.
I actually haven't been to the top.
I kind of nixed it when we were just in Paris. It would have been so miserable with that heat.
Yeah.
I didn't even think
we
about
did
that,
so much in Paris. Yeah. We went so hard in Paris.
We did.
It was like, and that was the last day we were there. And I remember we just walked by and I like got my snap and I was like, perfect.
Yeah. It was like nice because it was cooling down because later in the afternoon.
I mean, we had a really beautiful view of it.
Like, yeah. We got to see it do its little like flickery thing.
I was very happy with my Eiffel Tower experience. I'm sure we'll go back. Also, going back to her years in Spain and Portugal, she got into flamenco dancing.
Of course she did.
I know, right? God, she's so awesome.
She's making me want to go, like, pick up some new skills. Like, I just want to learn to do something in the next week.
This is, like,
as an ode to Sonia Delaunay.
This is one of those things, like, where I kind of feel very connected to her, and I think it is partially that, like, Scorpio energy. In that, like, the fact that she just, like, wanted to do everything, because if there's been, like, one thing that has colored my entire life, it's been this, like, incessant desire to do everything, which is, like, really overwhelming a lot of the time, and then you end up just, like, paralyzed and doing nothing because you're overwhelmed by all the things you want to do.
Yeah, that sounds like my life right now.
Yeah, that's my whole life forever. That's been my entire life, because I just am interested in so many things and I want to do everything.
But we should also give ourselves some credit, because we just got a master's degree, so.
I'm not saying we haven't done
cool shit. We're not too paralyzed, but it's that feeling of being paralyzed is more overwhelming than actually accomplishing things sometimes. Like, mentally, even if you are accomplishing things at the same time, if you mentally feel that,
yeah,
that's how I get. I'm not talking about you. I'm projecting right now.
No, it's totally true, because that's been, I think, for a lot of my life, is I dip my toe in all these, like, mm-hmm. different pools, and I'm so interested in so many things, but I also struggle with this, like, I never feel like I'm going to be amazing at anything because yeah. I break myself off into pieces.
Yeah.
Like, dance is so important to me, and art is so important yeah. to me, and art history is so important to me, and music, and, like, yeah. I just, like, go in a million directions, and even just, like, nature,
yeah.
and, like,
oh, same.
I just feel like I'm always dividing myself up into so many directions that I'm, like, I'm never truly going to be great at one thing. But then, like, there's badass babes like this who she just said, fuck it, and she was just awesome at a bunch of things. So, like,
yeah.
it makes me feel good. That is a reality. Like, you can still be really good at a lot of things.
Totally. Well, and how the world perceives your ability at things is so much different than how you perceive
it's
it yourself.
So true.
Like, she may not have considered herself an expert at all of these things, but, like, from where we're standing, like, holy shit.
Yeah, she's
she
amazing.
She accomplished so much.
My last little thing I did want to touch on, too, which is another reason why I'm just, like, feeling very soul sistery with this woman. Because, yeah, so far, like, Fauvism's my fave.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm, like, obsessed with craft and,
yeah.
like, the applied arts and stuff. So many things about her I feel very connected to. But then I read this interview with her, and they were talking about her religion. And she didn't really define her religion, but she basically, like, summed it up to being pagan. And then she, there's a quote by her, "Now I would worship pagan gods. It's the only religion I recognize. Praying to beauty. There's a great deal of selflessness in that, and a purely aesthetic element which alone ennobles life and makes it love."
Goosebumps.
I love her so much.
Goosebumps.
I love her.
Yeah.
I just love
you guys,
her.
She's awesome. Go to our page and look at her stuff, and then go on your own and look at her
mm-hmm.
stuff. Like, she's remarkable. I mean, in her life, she was an artist in, like, many mediums. So, like, artist being a very small word to define so many things. She was a designer, furniture designer, fashion designer, textiles. Like, she did so many things, you guys.
She did all the things. I want to do all the things.
She spoke all the languages. She
gives me hope that I, too, can do all the things.
I know.
And hopefully she gives you hope.
I was going to say, I hope she
that you
inspires some of you as much as she inspired us, because it's a very warm, fuzzy feeling.
It is. Should we do a couple quick listener mails?
Yeah.
Oh, also, we didn't really get to talk about it, but we'll put it up on the website. You should also check out Yellow Nude from 1908. So a lot of her works, a lot of her paintings, she dealt a lot with colors in these concentric circles. That was kind of her thing. But then she did a nude in 1908 called Yellow Nude, which I really like a lot. It looks very Fauvist. It's very
mm-hmm.
colorful. And I was reading a description of it, and the writer, who, like, not trying to call out the writer or anything, but, like, the writer said, "Delaunay makes no attempt to depict her as attractive, giving the artwork a brusque modern feel." And I kind of stopped and, like, sighed a little bit, because I was like, maybe...
Whose definition of attractive?
Exactly, because
it's
maybe...
Painting.
It's a beautiful painting. And two, maybe she, you know, wasn't making it for the male gaze,
yeah,
like every other nude.
That's a better way to put it.
Exactly. And I was like, so what attractive are you talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, there's nothing unattractive about this painting.
There really isn't.
There
really
isn't. If,
it's beautiful.
You're right. What he was probably hinting at is that she's not emphasizing female fertility. That's...
Yeah,
that's,
or sexuality.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's
kind of
still sexual.
I was
gonna
say she's wearing knee-high boots.
Yeah, I'm not
boots.
Saying it's
yeah.
It's unlike I'm
it's
not saying
very,
it's not sexual.
Yeah.
But it's
not sexuality
in the way that
of a sexual object or like sexualizing her.
Exactly, it's not like presenting to a male the way a lot of nudes are and were at this time. So I think that's what the writer was getting at, but wording matters.
Yeah.
And the way I read this painting is, yeah, it's a female nude, but it was painted by a female, and it wasn't
it's
necessarily
cool.
painted for the male gaze, which...
The brushstrokes alone.
I know, and just the colors, that blue against that yellow.
See, yeah, this is a great predecessor to the simultaneous painting. I'm just going to say simultaneous because I can't say that word.
Simultanism.
Simultanism.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The colors, especially on the woman, I think are incredible.
That would be a great print. I would put that in any living space that I...
All of them.
That I dwelled
within. All right, let's do a quick listener mail. Do you want to read this?
Yeah. Hi, AH Babes. Your European trip episode reminded me of an incredible experience at the Musée d'Art Moderne de la Ville de Paris. How's that?
Hey!
It's the champagne. Part of your Palais de Tokyo. Part of the Palais de Tokyo. It was this weird situation where the porter slash security guys were so into a special exhibition that they were trying to talk us into going in, even though we didn't want to spend the money because we were poor students. Word. Originally, we were on a bike trip, but got drenched by a rainy summer and decided to stay in Paris at a campsite because we could not afford even a youth hostel. We only had $5 per day for everything, including food and accommodation. We didn't have money to go to any museums unless they were free. We went into the museum just to look around and saw some sets of playing cards designed by artists. There were these two middle-aged porters who sold merch and tickets. They kept asking us why we were not going into the exhibition and told us they would give us a reduced student price without an ID, but we didn't want to go over our tiny budget. After about 20 minutes, one of the porters said he would take two of us in briefly, free of charge, to show us what we were missing. He then gave us a 3-minute lighting tour, pointing excitedly to various paintings and showing us what cool stuff we were missing. We were sold on the exhibition by both the paintings and by his enthusiasm. We went over budget and bought the tickets. The special exhibition was abstract paintings by it was the first time for me that I really got into abstract art, and it probably wouldn't have happened without those two porters in the museum. It was all the cooler because they were not curators or artsy-fartsy types you get in art galleries. They were just two working-class porter guys who really liked where they worked. The paintings were really impressive in person in a way you can't really explain. Images on the internet don't come anywhere close. I've been to the Louvre, the Hermitage, and the Uffizi, but this was definitely my coolest museum experience due to the ordinary, non-snooty people with genuine enthusiasm for art. Cheers, Marcus.
Aw, that's a really nice story.
That is a cool story.
It is, and I also love just the whole, like, $5 a day Euro trip thing. Because, I mean, our budget wasn't that small, but we know what it's like to make your way through Europe on a tiny budget.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Many elements of that story.
Yeah.
Just awesome.
Even just, like, the rainy summer day. Like, how lovely.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Marcus.
Yeah. And also, Marcus has emailed us multiple times. He's a big fan, and he's emailed us with a lot of cool information. And he is also to thank for a solid improvement in our audio quality, because he introduced me to Authonic, which I've been filtering our sound through before I edit, and I think it has just, like, gave us a much better baseline to work with, because our last few episodes have sounded way better.
Yeah. So of you out there who have had issue with our sound, which we totally understand, you send warm thoughts to sweet Marcus.
Yeah, Marcus has helped a lot.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, yeah, I think our sound has been really good recently, and then once we get our new equipment going, it should be solid.
Mm-hmm.
I have felt like there have been very little issues since that great tip coming from Marcus. So thank you so much for listening and for sending your stories our way. We very much appreciate it.
Definitely. Alright.
So if you have any stories you want to share with us, arthistorybabes@gmail.com. Make sure to get on our subscriber list. Go to arthistorybabes.com/contact, and we will be sending out monthly newsletters.
Monthly, guys, so don't worry about, like, getting on something where you get spammed with a ton of stuff.
We don't have time to spam.
Yeah, we really don't.
It's not gonna happen.
But if you're a fan of the podcast, you know, just a little monthly up-to-date.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Keep you up to date, keep you in the know. So that should be pretty fun. Get on our subscriber list. Also, if you want extra episodes, head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/arthistorybabes. We've been getting a lot of really great patronage the past few weeks since we've started doing these extra episodes.
And so we're ramping up the extra episodes. So
exactly. We're going to do minimum one a month, but we're going to try and do more than one a month when we can. So
and the more people that are interested, the more incentive we have to get those extra episodes
exactly.
out.
Exactly. The more patrons we have, the more we want to make our patrons happy. So definitely head over there. Patreon.com/arthistorybabes. Don't forget to write us a review on iTunes. Also got some new reviews that are super sweet. Oh my god, we've got some really cute ones lately. All of the social medias, Tumblr, Facebook, like us, Instagram. We did a Instagram live recently. So we're trying to do that kind of stuff. It's pretty fun. I like it. It's kind of a neat way to connect. So Instagram at Art History Babes Podcast, Twitter at Art History Babes. You know, just get on our level, basically.
For real. We promise to keep entertaining you on all platforms.
We will keep it going. So, thank you so much for listening to our episode about Sonia Delaunay, the badassest of the badass babes.
Right? She is the queen of color, you guys. The queen of color.
So cool. Yeah, and we will catch you later.
Thanks.
Bye.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the art history babes.
Too structured. I don't know. Yeah, it's whimsical. It's beautiful.
It's very whimsical. And I love a good dose of whimsy.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's awesome.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.